coming up on today's program.
Even if someone has a phone, they may not know how to book appointments, refill prescriptions, or message their doctor. So a lot of what we want to do is bridge that gap and help our communities get the access they deserve.
Improving healthcare in rural communities. I'm Jerry Kenney. This is WISO Weekend. That story coming up later in our program. Thanks so much for sharing your weekend with WISO. Up first in the program, Dayton Public Schools welcomed students this past week for the 2025-26 school year. During the summer, district staff helped many of those students learn how to navigate the RTA system. WISO's Catherine Mobley visited Ponant's Technical Career Center and rode along with one group of freshmen as they sampled the city's mass transit system. Check it out.
This school year, Ponant's Career Technology Center is expecting about 300 freshmen. Some will have to use the Greater Dayton RTA system to get to and from school. On this Friday afternoon, they're learning about the RTA app.
But from the hub to here.
Okay,
so you know what bus you're
from. Tierra McGee is the senior academic coordinator for Dayton Public Schools. District-wide, incoming freshmen will number around 1,400. And for the past few weeks, at the District 7 high schools, McGee and other staff have given freshmen a crash course on how to use the city's public transit service.
Really, it's a life skill. We want to make sure that students understand how to ride public transportation, because if you know how to use an app, if you know how to get transported, then you're able to do that on your own and become more of an independent person.
Ponant's on West Washington Street is less than a mile and a half from RTA's downtown hub on East 4th Street. A school bus drops us off at the hub.
All right, we have to go to the center. Right here.
We gather on the middle strip where passengers board and debark RTA buses. McGee points out RTA workers on hand to answer route questions.
All right, guys, this is Miss Latasha. So remember how we said when you are downtown that there are people in like green shirts or green and black shirts. So if you had confusion at all of where am I supposed to go or what bus am I supposed to ride, you would ask someone like Miss Latasha.
RTA staff also use the app to show students other bus options to get to Ponant's.
And bus 9 go up the Mommy Chapel area. Bus 9, there go bus 8 right there. You want to see if that's close to where y'all going?
Our group boards bus 19 headed back to the Career Center. McGee emphasizes the RTA app also provides other important information.
How far you'll have to walk to get to wherever your location was from there, from that bus stop. From here, then it's like a 7-minute walk.
Opponents. So we'll have to get off and walk 7 minutes. Okay, so you want me to get my exercise in?
I'm glad I'm getting my steps in today because I didn't walk this morning.
Once back inside the school, McGee and Ponant's assistant principal, Wesley Rodenberg, emphasized courtesy and safety.
If you see somebody else, especially on a walker, in a wheelchair, get out of their way, be considerate. Because we had so many people, somebody on a walker had to go out and around us into the bus lane. Make sure you're paying attention to what's going on around you at all time.
And if you see danger, move away from it. If you see that there's an issue, move away from it, and you know who to talk to. A person in a green or black shirt that has RTA on it, not just anybody in a green or black shirt, right? You want to make sure that they work for the RTA. That's who you go to.
According to McGee, when students master the skill of using RTA, it reduces one of the barriers that can negatively impact a student's attendance, lack of transportation.
Buses rotate every 35, 40 minutes, and so it's important for students to understand, okay, how long will I have to wait for the next bus? How early do I need to leave my home, or how early do I need to leave a location to make sure that I'm at school on time? And so looking at the transit app, it kind of helps them plan ahead. And so if they understand how to plan ahead and account for those multiple bus times, then they're able to get to school on time.
A vital life skill, McGee says, will help these DPS students grow in confidence and independence. Reporting for WISO News, I'm Catherine Mobley.
A first-of-its-kind study from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology shows some concerning findings on how AI affects brain activity, as all Ohio State University students, starting with this fall's freshman class, will be trained to use AI in their majors. The study found those who used ChatGPT to help write essays showed less brain activity than those who used only their brain. Ohio State University did not study how artificial intelligence usage affects learning before rolling out plans to make every student AI fluent. For the Ohio Newsroom, George Shilcock reports.
MIT researcher Natalia Kosmina and her team invited 54 college students from the Boston region to participate in the study. They were split into three groups and assigned to complete SAT-style essays while their brain activity was monitored.
One group was allowed to use ChatGPT only, so they couldn't use anything else. Another group was allowed to use search engine. And then the third group was able to use only their brain.
These essays weren't complicated. They had only 20 minutes to write them in each of the three sessions. Each student was able to pick from the same three topics each session.
So they didn't need any prior knowledge. So the topics were like, is there a perfect society? What is happiness? And things like that.
A smaller number of students took part in a fourth session with the same essay prompts they had already written about, but this time with an added twist. The students who originally used ChatGPT had to do the work all on their own. The ones who just used their brains were allowed to supplement their work with ChatGPT. The results were concerning, but not as much as some initial news reporting would have you believe. Some reports claimed the study showed using ChatGPT causes laziness and makes you dumb.
Oh, there is a brain rot. There is some laziness, drop in IQ, brain went on vacation. Some of those were pretty funny, but obviously some were pretty ridiculous and all actually are incorrect.
The study found that while these students wrote, the chatter happening in the brain between neurons scaled down as each tool was introduced. Students using ChatGPT showed the lowest brain activity. The ChatGPT participants couldn't even accurately recall their own essays. Those essays were also reviewed by English teachers who didn't know what tech was used for each. The AI papers were panned as unoriginal and, as the English teachers put it,
so they actually said that they found essays soulless.
That fourth test, albeit with a smaller sample size, is what Kosmina says showed the most interesting results. The group who started using ChatGPT after writing the essays on their own at first showed much higher levels of brain activity. Kosmina says this shows the timing of when these tools are introduced could be actually very important and critical. The AI could potentially create a better outcome if the participants already knew the fundamentals of a subject. Now, Ohio State expects students to be fluent in AI usage by the time they graduate, starting with the incoming freshman class. However, Ohio's flagship university didn't conduct academic studies before making this choice. Instead, what OSU is doing is encouraging students to use AI while building guardrails and studying whether it ultimately adds value to their education.
We're really needing to respond to just this rapid growth in data and AI tools.
That's OSU Vice Provost Anika Anthony with Ohio State's Michael V. Drake Institute for Teaching and Learning. Anthony says the AI Fluency Initiative is needed because students are already using AI. She says this needs to be done regardless of whether AI causes students to use their brain less.
So there will be some institutional research as a part of a broad formative evaluation, so that as this effort continues, the university can continuously improve and make sure that that this is doing good.
Anthony says OSU wants to make sure students develop comfort and skills using AI beyond their undergraduate program or their time at Ohio State. Faculty and teachers will still be monitoring and reporting data on how well students are doing. Essentially, OSU will be conducting a university-wide experiment on its over 45,000 undergraduate students to see how AI impacts learning. Ohio State will also do its own research.
There may be standardized tests within the academic program that students are taking. So there may be practice tests that students may eventually have to take to earn a license or to earn a certificate within a specific field.
Kasmina says banning AI outright isn't the answer, and she understands why schools like OSU are pushing forward with programs like this. But Kasmina says there needs to be more studies on how AI impacts learning and what using AI could potentially benefit and harm.
These crucial stages of, you know, practice, repetition, making mistakes, because you can learn from those mistakes, developing the deeper understanding is essential, especially if you want to ensure that your student is developing some genuine expertise.
For the Ohio Newsroom, I'm George Shokok in Columbus.
You're listening to WISO Weekend on 91.3 WYSO. I'm Jerry Kenny. Thanks so much for sharing your weekend with WISO. Coming up, we've got some music waiting in the wings, but up next, this week we wrapped up this season of Translucent, a series by Antioch College student and WISO intern Lee Wade. Throughout the season, Lee has given us insight into many different people and issues that shape trans lives. Here's Lee with this final installment.
Hi, I'm Lee Wade, and you're listening to Translucent, a series that amplifies trans voices, humanizes our community, and creates space for the real everyday conversations that don't make headlines. On May 4th, a crowd of trans people and allies gathered at the Courthouse Square in downtown Dayton, Ohio, for the We Will Not Be Erased Trans Rights Rally. The event, organized by the Gatlin Dam Group, DEFA, and PFLAG Dayton, was a powerful stand against anti-LGBTQ+ legislation and a passionate call for trans rights. The event was filled with energy, emotion, and a strong sense of community. Trans people, allies, and others across the LGBTQ+ spectrum gathered to show their support and demand justice. I wanted to hear directly from the people who showed up. Here's what they had to say. What gives you hope today?
I think the people here, I mean, there's so much energy and joy and enthusiasm, and I just don't believe that we're going to fail. It might be a long, hard fight, but it's not a losing fight.
What gives me hope today is the amount of people who show up to things like this, trans and non-trans, and how hard I see everyone in my community fighting for everyone else there.
What gives me hope is that I know that any attack on any marginalized group is an attack on all of us, and they can take whatever they want from you, but at the end of the day, they cannot take your fight, they cannot take your spirit, and they can't take your passion from you.
What gives me hope, honestly, seeing, you know, the news, seeing how many people show up to these protests and rallies, it shows that even in red states such as Ohio, you know, people like me are still out there and people are still fighting to this day, even when nothing but, you know, pure crap has been thrown at us.
My friends give me hope, because if my friends are there, friends are here with me, I could do anything, honestly. I just love them.
What gives you hope right now?
Well, I always look back to especially Sylvia Rivera's speech, Y'all Better Quiet Down, but a lot of what they were doing around Stonewall, what our trans elders have said and what they were doing.
Really, it's just how relatable we all are to one another that gives me hope.
What gives you hope right now?
Knowing that even though we have been marginalized and discriminated against, we still persist. They cannot stamp us out. They've tried to kill us systematically through the years, and we keep coming back like cockroaches. Hey, they can't kill us.
A special thanks to
Catherine Devlin,
Michael Nephilim,
Cozy Bradley,
Isabella Lieback,
Robin Morris,
Judas Damon,
Josh Mitchell,
Cameron Bartlett,
and many more. What gave me hope that day wasn't just the moving speeches or the signs. It was the act of showing up and coming together, loud and clear. It was a reminder that our very existence is an act of resistance, and that no matter the challenges, the trans community will not be erased. As I wrap up the season, maybe take a moment and ask yourself, what gives you hope today? Until next time, I'm Lee Wade, and thank you for listening to Translucent.
You can listen to all past episodes of Translucent on our website at WISO.org. Translucent is made possible by support from the Ruby Girls Foundation and is produced at the Eichelberger Center for Community Voices at WISO. Many of you may know that Saturday, Dayton Porch Fest returns to the historic St. Anne's Hill neighborhood for their biggest year effort. If you're listening on Sunday morning, that event was yesterday. There are over 50 bands, food trucks, and new this year, an afterfest at Levitt Pavilion. Event organizer Peter Benkendorf stopped by the WISO studios a week before the event with local bands Ren One and Colin Richards and Spare Change for a preview. Here's the opening tune from that interview segment. This is music from Ren One on WISO.
Now, folks may know, in addition to Grow, which we've been playing for a little while now, they might know your voice from way back when,
yeah.
The artist formerly known as Mariah J.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the transformation into Ren One.
Yeah. So the names comes from Renaissance. I joined Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, and that's actually where I got the name Renaissance. And the meaning behind Renaissance is definitely reflective of just the journey I've been on as an artist, as a creative. And so I wanted to carry that with me and change my name and shorten it and just be Ren One now. So, and also the ace of my line. So that's where the one comes from. So
you have some collaborators on Grow and here tonight. Tell me who you're performing with.
Yeah, so I am performing today with Rafiki, and we created this song together with some other amazing artists in the city. Rafiki, you wanna share?
Yeah. I mean, it's so cool to be here, to be on this cool creative journey. Grow was a song that definitely took its time, and it was right on time when we shared it. You know, it was a seed song that we were inspired to share, just inspiring and encouraging the community to really ask themselves those meaningful questions of what they need, want, desire, and require to grow. And then also just thinking about those things in terms of like the answers to that question, like what is your seed? What is your soil? What is your sunlight? What is your water? In terms of what is our passion and the things that we want to grow. And it's definitely been an inspiration to me. I'm consistently on this journey of discovery and understanding when it comes to growth, but it's been awesome to see us, you know, as creatives grow through the process and just the new music. I'm excited about some of the new music that Ren One has been working on. I've been working on some stuff as well, just really going back to the drawing board, but just shout out to the community of creatives that have made this possible. And, you know, shout out to YSL for making platforms like this that we're able to, you know, to share our hearts and our art.
Conversation and music from local bands Ren One and Rafiki on Kaleidoscope recently. You can catch the full interview on our website at WYSO.org and hear the other performers. Up next on YSO Weekend, today from the Ohio Newsroom.
Uplift me as the king, or you could keep it. Uplift me as the king, or you could keep it. If it'll take me to the moon, you could keep it. If it'll take me to the moon, you could keep it. Love on me, lift me up higher. Bow to this royalty, fulfill my desires. Fulfill my desires.
Today from the Ohio Newsroom, the Digital Rural Health Corps. Today from the Ohio Newsroom takes you around the state, connecting you with news and neighbors from all over Ohio. I'm Erin Gottsacker. A group of Ohio medical students is working to improve healthcare in the state's rural communities by teaching people how to navigate technology to access telehealth services. Gargi Rajput is a first-year medical student at the Boone Shop School of Medicine in Dayton, where she's a part of the American Medical Student Association's Digital Rural Health Corps. Hi, Gargi.
Hi, Erin.
So first off, what is the Digital Rural Health Corps, and how is it helping our state's rural residents?
So digital rural health has been a topic that we, as the AMHSA Digital Health Corps, have been really trying to take a look at to make sure, what does health literacy look like in rural communities? What we're doing is we're leading a student-powered initiative that helps people in rural communities learn how to use digital health tools like telehealth, patient portals, and mobile apps so they can get the care they need. In rural communities, many don't have broadband access at home or have never used a patient portal. Since a lot of healthcare is going digital, we need to address this because a lot of rural residents are being left behind. Even if someone has a phone, they may not know how to book appointments, refill prescriptions, or message their doctor. So a lot of what we want to do is bridge that gap and help our communities get the access they deserve.
Okay, so you're a digital health navigator. What does that entail?
So a lot of our work involves going out into the community and actually speaking with community members. Currently, a big portion of what we're doing is the eHeals questionnaire for patients. And through this questionnaire, we are able to understand if people know how to find helpful health resources on the internet, gauge their confidence level in being able to absorb that information to make health decisions, and also just understand the level of skills they have or may need to evaluate how to navigate everything when it comes to digital health portals.
Tell us more about the scope of this project. How many other students are involved and where are they working?
Over 130 students have been trained to serve as digital health navigators, just like me. And we've had over 15 community deployments across 5 Ohio counties. This program actually launched in the spring of 2024. So we've come a long way, just over a year. And our deployments include places such as libraries, pharmacies, senior centers. Now we're hoping to expand to include partnerships with hospital discharge teams. And really, our goal is to be able to replicate this model nationally through AMHSA chapters. And very, very excited that Ohio happens to be the very first place where we're starting this.
Wow. Well, some parts of rural Ohio still lack broadband, so people aren't able to access the internet from their home. Why do you think helping people learn how to use telehealth is the best avenue to bridge this urban-rural health divide going forward?
You know, access to broadband is difficult, but even when someone has a phone, they may not know ways that they can book appointments, refill prescriptions, or message their doctor even through conversations or texts. So I think for us, it's just really opening doors to different avenues where they can reach healthcare professionals and allowing them to, you know, learn the ways of what that looks like so we can equip them with skills for what's coming in the future.
That was Gargi Rajput with the Digital Rural Health Corps. Thanks, Gargi.
Thank you.
That's all today from the Ohio Newsroom. We'll talk with you tomorrow.
This is Bird Note. Ah, mallards at your local pond. They're our largest dabbling duck, and among ducks, the most abundant species. They're the source of all domestic ducks, except the Muscovy. There's a female making herself heard. But does it seem that all the brightly colored male mallards have disappeared? By now, the male duck's need for fancy feathers to attract the females has passed. The male mallards have molted, dropping their bright green, reddish, black, and white feathers and replacing them with mottled brown ones. Changing into more subdued colors for the months of summer helps camouflage the male ducks, protecting them from predators. Come fall, the mallards will molt again and return to the colorful dandies we remember. In the meantime, while all the mallards look like brownish females, there's one way to distinguish males from females. Look closely at the bill. The male's bill is dull yellow, while the female's is orange marked with black. And watch to see which duck is quacking. That's the female mallard. Male mallards make a more subdued and raspy call, mostly when courting or greeting, or when they feel threatened. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
chirping our way to the end of this program with a bird note telling vivid, sound-rich stories about birds and the challenges they face. You can tune in every week for that and find more on our website at wiso.org. Again, that's a wrap for this weekend edition of WISO Weekend. Thanks for sharing your weekends with us. As always, we've got more stories coming your way. Next time, I'm Jerry Kenney. Join us then.